So we're studying Pirkei Avos based on Reb Chaim Volozhin. We started this project, I want to continue with it. And what I'd like to do is read to you a paragraph in Reb Chaim, and then on the page that I gave you to try to embellish it and expand upon it. Reb Chaim says the following. The Medrash claims that all the Nevi'im, except for Moshe Rabbeinu, were limited to Ko Amar Hashem. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu said, Vizeh, Zeh HaDavar. And the reason for that, explains Reb Chaim, is that when the Navi says Ko Amar Hashem, what he's describing is a dmut, some sort of a vision, and he's interpreting that vision. They, the other Nevi'im, couldn't say Zeh Davar. Why? Because Zeh Davar means that this is what they heard from Hashem without any change, without any interpretation. Only Moshe Rabbeinu has the unique nevuah that he could say Zeh HaDavar because he hears straight from Hashem, B'dibur imo kasher yidaber ish al re'ehu. Absolute clarity. Hashem is speaking to Moshe, and that's Zeh HaDavar. Now Reb Chaim Volozhin wants to know, what is it about Moshe Rabbeinu that allowed him, facilitate that he could reach that special level of Zeh HaDavar? That Hashem speaks to him directly, Kasher Yidaber Ish El Re'ehu. Says Reb Chaim Volozhin, Zeu Machmas Hizdakakus HaChomer Etzlo. That Moshe Rabbeinu's physicality was not a blockage to spirituality. It wasn't two separate entities that were sort of fighting one against the other. But rather, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to purify his body completely, the chomer, the physicality, the material element. And therefore, utmunas Hashem yabit. That's the pasuk that describes Moshe Rabbeinu. Loshen habata, says Reb Chaim Volozhin, is histaklus yisera bi'etzema inyan. That piercing view or sight that pierces through all the veils and is able to see something precise, that's a spiritual view of divinity, of godliness, that only Moshe is capable of because Moshe is pure spirituality. His body is no longer chomer. Then Reb Chaim asks, well, how did Moshe Rabbeinu reach that level? You know, it's like a chadgadi here. So we're back to the question, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu purified his body, his chomer, his physicality, but how did he do so? Says Reb Chaim, v'kol zeh, zocha machmas rov ha'anova shehoyevo. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is the personification of anova, of humility, and therefore, Hoya Guf Nechshav Etzlo Kidover Ma. The Guf itself was not considered anything of significance. That's the Midah of Anova, of humility of Moshe Rabbeinu. In fact, Reb Chaim Volozhin in an earlier section of Piskah here, he says that when Hashem cries out, Moshe, Moshe, there's no psik taime. It's not Moshe kama, you know, with an astachdim between, and then Moshe. It's Moshe Moshe. Shenizdakek etzlo haguf kol kach. Shelo hayeshum chatzitza uhefse klal. There was no separation between haoris neshama, the supernal light of his soul, and his guf. Some sort of absolute synthesis or unity of both his physical and his spiritual. V'zeh hayom mipnei rov shifluso v'anvenuso. And this is a result of his shiflut, his anova. Shechoshav atzmo ke'ilu haguf eino. He completely negated the guf. V'omer, he declared v'anachnu ma. And Reb Chaim Volozhin understands that v'anachnu ma means that our guf is nothing. It's complete negation of the guf. And if Moshe Rabbeinu succeeds in negating the physicality as a separation, as a barrier to spirituality, to divine communication, l'chein, hashchina midaberes mitok gronu shel Moshe. In other words, normally the goof is a mavdil, it's a chotzeis, and the Shekhinah can't go into Moshe Rabbeinu. But in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, he's purely spiritual, and therefore he's capable of doing that. In the next paragraph, Rav Chaim claims that there's a difference between Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, and then it says umisara liYoshua. It doesn't say Kabbalah by Yehoshua. Says Rav Chaim, Lachain, Nemar Bokan, Loshen Kabbalah miSinai. What's the significance of Kibel miSinai? That Moshe Rabbeinu, Beloshem Sheshama Bo, in the exact language that he heard it, Niskabla Etzlo Hanavuah. The language of Hashem is the communication directly to Moshe. However, Haloshem Kabbalah, who miyad liyad, Kabbalah doesn't mean direct, but it goes from one hand to the other. B'Yoshua, shalohaya anov kimoshe Rabbeinu, Yoshua did not reach that level of anova, v'lo nizdakech etzlo hachomer kamohu, he was not capable, Yoshua, of completely spiritualizing his physicality, lachen lo nemar bo loshan mesira, ela loshan Kabbalah. Shelo kibel es koladvar mi Moshe bavayosan lo. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to receive it from Sinai kehavayosan, exactly word for word as it is, going directly into Moshe's neshama without any separation, any avdol, any chatzitz of a goof. But Yoshua was not capable of that level because he didn't reach that negation of the goof. Anachnu ma v'lo nizdakech etzol achomer kamohu, and therefore by Yoshua it's a concept not of Mesira, but rather of Kabbalah. And Kabbalah means it goes through one step and then another step. So just to summarize, what we see here in Rav Chaim Volozhin are two major points. Point number one is that Moshe Rabbeinu, because of his great shiflus and anova, reaches the level of his dakikus haguf legamrei, and therefore it's Shechina medaberes mitok gronos shel Moshe zadover, he hears it like a person speaking to someone else. And number two, Yehoshua is on a lower madrega, he does not reach that level of his dakagus haguf, and therefore his nevuah is already ko'amar Hashem in a case where he sees a vision and then he has to translate it into language.
Was Moshe Rabbeinu's goof, was he to be transcended continuously, or was it like as needed he would do it when he talked with Hashem?
I don't know. It sounds like it was continuous. You know, it was a madrega.
He was still living in the world. He was still talking to Klal Yisrael. He's still living.
Correct. I don't think Rav Chaim Volozhin means to say that there is no goof over here. There certainly is a goof. You know, you can see Moshe Rabbeinu's goof. It's not like his goof disappeared and poof, it went up to smoke. But he means that goof, in terms of its function in the spiritual realm, was no longer serving as a barrier that Moshe Rabbeinu had to overcome. You know, it's not a barrier anymore. It's pure spirituality. Maybe we could add that according to Rav Chaim Volozhin, we understand a little better what it means when it says Karan Arpanov, you know, that there was a radiation of some sort of beam, spiritual, supernal lights that came from Moshe Rabbeinu, because his physicality was not a mafsik. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu is called in the Torah Ish Elokim. In other words, he's an Ish. He lives the same way you and I live, with blood that goes around, circulates around the body and brings oxygen to all the cells. But he's called Ish Elokim because there's no contradiction here. There's no confrontation between the Ish element and the Elokim element. And therefore, Shechina medaberes mitok grono, the Dibur of Hashem goes directly to Moshe, receives it, and there's no process of, disintegration or conversion. You know, normally when you send out sound waves, you know, you have to convert them and then interpret them. All that was necessary for all the prophets, but not for Moshe Rabbeinu. So what I have here on this sheet for you is, on one side of the sheet, which I put a number one on, I have source material to discuss this concept of shiflus and anova. What is it all about? And on the flip side of the page, number two, I want to discuss the relationship between the darga, the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, and the level of Yoshua. Those are our two topics for tonight, if Hashem grants us the ability to cover. So here's the handout, and just one second. If Okay. So the first thing on page one is the quote that we saw just now from Reb Chaim Volozhin. How is Moshe Rabbeinu Zocheh to the level of Zeh HaDavar, of a direct communication from Hashem, Machmas Rov HaNova, because he reached this unbelievable, attained this level of HaNova, of humility, Shohayibo, Shoyah Guf Nechshev Etzlo Kedavar Ma. The Guf was not considered anything. One of the great Bali Musar of the previous generation was Rav Elio Lapyan. And he asks the following question. He says, what is your definition of anova? What do you mean by humility? Does that mean that a person doesn't recognize his value? On the contrary, he says, Tzorech Adam Leida Kochos Nafsho, a person has to recognize what he's capable of. So what does anova mean? What does it mean to be humble? You know, it doesn't mean to be down on myself and deny and contradict that I have certain kishronot, I have certain talents and abilities. Rak, but rather Yachshov ki kishronotav uskulotav hem matnat shamayim. Don't boast about it. Don't lord it over someone else. Oh, I'm great. I'm brilliant. I'm a genius. No, these are gifts that God gave you. V'einem shalo. It really doesn't originate with yourself. You know, you can't claim ownership on this genius because you know you lucked out. Hashem granted you that genius. If another person would have had the same, if Hashem would have bestowed the same gifts and talents and brilliance on another person, then maybe his friend would have achieved Yoser Mimeno. He would have done with that potential even greater. He would have achieved even greater, accomplishments. And therefore, he says, Hu bal chov lekono. The real essence of anova, of humility, is a sense of I owe it to Hashem. Not that I can claim it for myself, but that I realize that this is a gift from God. And if it's a gift from God, then God bestowed upon me that gift in order that I should utilize it, that I should maximize my potential. It's a challenge. And if I don't live up to that challenge, if I don't achieve what I'm capable of achieving, then I fall short. And in order to illustrate this idea, he says Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is described in the Torah as the Anov Mikol Adam. We saw that according to Rav Chaim Volozhin, it's that mid of Anivus, Anov and Shiflus of Moshe Rabbeinu that gives him the ability to reach the highest level of of Nevuah that no other Navi is able to achieve. But I don't get it. Moshe Rabbeinu himself wrote the Torah. And in the Torah that Moshe wrote, it says, Lokein avdi Moshe, b'chol beisi neman hu, peh el peh adaper bo, mare belo b'chidos, t'munas Hashem yavit. All these amazing descriptions of the superior quality of Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah are explicit in the Torah. So what are you going to tell me? Moshe didn't know about it? Obviously, Moshe knew about it. But he considered it a result of the gift that God bestowed upon him. In fact, one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim of the 13 principles of the faith is to believe that Nevuas Moshe Rabbeinu is absolutely true, that there's no Navi in that category. He's the Av LeNavim, the father or the giant of all Navim that came before him or after him. Certainly Moshe Rabbeinu is not suspect of denying that fundamental of Judaism. So he also believes with a full Emunah Shleima that his Nevuah is qualitatively superior. It's a different category than any Navi that came before him or that came after him. So obviously Moshe Rabbeinu knew his own greatness. You can't say that he didn't recognize his own greatness. So this is point number one, which we're getting from our first source, from Rav Elio Lapyan, namely that we should not make the mistake that an Anov simply is like an ostrich, which is with his head in the ground, that he doesn't recognize his own capacity, his own gifts and talents and achievements. Now, there's another great giant of Musa who came even before Rav Lapyan. His name is Rav Leib Chassman. He was a mashkiah, if I'm not mistaken, in the Chevron Yeshiva back a century ago almost. And he says, Pashut, who... It's simple, it goes without saying, Sha'anav Enu Nikur Mishani Odea Mahuso Vekochos Nafsho. You wouldn't describe a person who's not aware of his abilities and his talents as an unav if he's not aware of them. Kishota, who I have a different way of describing him. He's an idiot. He's stupid. How could he not recognize what he's capable of? But even though he recognizes that everything that he has, and he's achieved such great things, and he's been bestowed with tremendous talents, nevertheless, he doesn't claim it for himself. He's not a big shot. You know, very often you have rich people, they lord it over you, they tell you about how they created a business, and with all their genius, and they were able to make a crash, you know, what's it called in the market, you know, they were able to...
A splash
in the market. But little do they admit that that was a gift, a genius that was given to them. And it's not theirs to claim that they created it. El Barachmei Hashem, the source for all these gifts, is divine compassion, Shehetiv Ivim Anosan Lo, and that's the Hargosha they should have. That's the true Anav. The true Anav, again, both in Rabbi Lev Chassman's philosophy and that of Rabbi Leo Lipian, is a person who, on the one hand, recognizes all his great talents and achievements, but on the other, he attributes them to the source of all sources. These are gifts that God gave to him. Now, about 50 years ago, the Chazon Ish died. He was probably, here in Eretz Yisrael, the greatest Talmud Chacham in his time, except for the Brisker Rav, who came later on. And he writes that, what is the definition of anova? How do you define humility? He says, many people make the mistake, and they think that an anav is someone who thinks of himself as an idiot, as a boor and a rake. You know, he's an empty person. He's an ignoramus. He has no intelligence level. He says that's as far from the truth as it can get. What is true humility? What is anav amitis? A person who recognizes his value. And if he's a great Torah scholar, he's allowed to recognize his achievements in Torah. He can hold himself. If he's not bloating himself, you know, he's not building himself up beyond of what he really is. He has a true, accurate picture or evaluation of himself. But nevertheless, he's not demanding of any honor or greatness. That's because he understands he's doing what he has to do. God gave him these challenges with these abilities, and he's facing those challenges with those abilities. Zechovaso balomo. By the way, do you know where those three words come from? Zechovaso balomo. Close. Mesilat Yesharim, right? He's really quoting here the Mesilat Yesharim, the opening line that, you know, Chal writes, why did I write this book? To describe to you what everybody knows about Chovaso Bolomo. And what is a person's obligation, his responsibility in this world? Why was he brought down to this world? Ligdol Baruch Niyut, in order to be, you know, climb and ascend the spiritual ladders. And the Gemara says, I mean, this is actually a famous Chazal, that Im Lomadato Torah Harve, Al Tevakish Gdul Yatzmucha Kilu Kach No Tzart. Instead of patting yourself on the back, on the shoulder, you know, you should say, this is why I was created. I'm living up to my responsibility. I wanted to share with you that Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, who lived about 2.5 centuries ago, cries out against what he saw in his time. And he says that the Mordechai, who came about 700 years before him, also cried out about this. The Mordechai writes that the sanctity of a Beis HaKnesses is equal to that of the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash. You know, the Heichal of the Beis HaMikdash was the Holy of Holies. And now he's comparing a Beis HaKnesses, which has a miniature Kiddusha sanctity of the Heichal, the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, says Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, the proper attitude that one should have within the environs, the atmosphere of a Beis HaKnesses, is that of Anova. He calls it Anova Yisera. What does that mean, Anov Yisera? Anov Yisera means that I don't lord myself over you. You know, you're sitting next to me in shul and I think I'm greater than you. No. It's Lahashvot Katon LeGadol. Again, the Katon maybe didn't achieve in Torah learning what the Gadol achieved, but the Gadol realizes that that's just a, in a sense, a quirk of history. That's the destiny based on divine providence, but they're really equal. And Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz cries out and he says that what I find in our shuls, And by the way, this is something that Rav Levi Yitzchak Mardichva would never have allowed him to publish, because we don't have claims against Klal Yisrael publicly. You know, those things we have to keep quiet. But he says he can't understand what's going on here. He says the greatest fights break out in the synagogue. This one fights about whether he could be the chaz in the shots. This one fights against the other one about why he didn't get an aliyah. Who's going to blow the shofar? Which esrog is greater than another esrog? Who's going to get the hakafos or the what's it called, before the hakafos? What's it called?
Ataresa.
Yeah. Who's going to get the Ataresa? Vishare Chailuke Kibudim. You know, the shul becomes the location for all the bickering and all the fighting about Kibudim. And he says this is exact antithesis of what the shul is meant to be. He says, by the way, which my hair stood on end when I saw this, the Aris Drash claims that the fights in the Beis Knesset got to the point where they had to go to secular courts. There were lawsuits about it. And then he talks about his community in Metz, M-E-T-Z, where, thank God, he says, we don't find any of this shtus going on, this hevel havolim. But he says, my heart breaks over what's going on in other communities all over Klal Yisrael. And the Torah says, lo talu b'malos, a person shouldn't build himself up by climbing higher than someone else. Obviously, we have to ascend as high as we can, but not to think, oh, I'm greater than he is. And he says, and what about on Shabbos and on Yontif? These are days of Kedusha. So imagine you have all the Kedusha you can imagine. It's Shabbos, you're in the Beis Knesses, which is like the Eichal of the Beis HaMikdash. And now here, where there should be an aviance of Shechira and an Anova, here we find Gaiva, and one person lords it over the next one, thinking, I'm superior to him, and I should get the kibud and not him. He says, what's the ultimate result, chas v'shalom, of such things? Dochen es ha-shechina. They push away the Shechina. The Shechina doesn't want to be together with a Bal Gaiva. Right, Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares Ani v'hu einam darim b'kfifa achas. And there's a famous story about the Belzer Rebbe, not this one, the previous one, his uncle, who came to a certain town and he had to choose who his host would be. There were two Chassidim in that town that would host the Belzer Rav. One of them was known to be a very, very fine person, very fine, but in the Kashrus laws, he wasn't so makpid. You know, he didn't have a badatz hechsher. The other Jew was very, very makpid on Kashrus, but he was known to be a little bit of a balgaiva. And Pelaploim, the Belzer Rebbe, decided to stay with the Onov, with the Shofel, even though his standards of Kashrus were a little bit below par. And when they asked the Belzer Rebbe why, he says, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't live in the same house as a Balgaiva. You know, Balgaiva doesn't give room for Hashem. You know, he takes over the whole house. So he says that on these days where Hashem wants to come to Klal Yisrael, he wants to come into the shuls, and now we should show gaiva. We should display gaiva. He says that's terrible. Now the Chidah wrote a book. It's a massive, massive book called Shem Hagdolim. And in that book, he goes through the history of the greats. I don't know if you know this. The Chidah was a traveler. His name is Azulai, and he used to love to travel from place to place. And he recorded all that he saw in the travels that he thought was relevant to Yerushalayim and Musar. And the Chidah lived about 2 centuries ago. The Beis Yosef lived 5 centuries ago. But in his essay on the Beis Yosef, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, he writes that I have a Kabbalah from a great person in Chochmah v'Yira, who in turn had a great Kabbalah from his Rebbe, so we're probably going back already 100, 150 years, Shekibel Mizkenim, who heard from the elders of his generation, about the Dar of Rav Yosef Karo. And what did they hear about that generation? That together with Rav Yosef Karo, there were two other great rabbis, one of whom I heard of, the other I never heard of, who could have easily written the Shulchan Aruch. Could you imagine? In other words, Rav Yosef Karo was one of the three musketeers who had the greatness to author the Shulchan Aruch and be mekabetz l'tocha kol adinim, to gather all the dinim, the egalish arsheim, and reveal the roots of all the halachas, and lasuke shmaita to aliva the hilchas. Okay, this is the Beis Yosef as opposed to the Shulchan Aruch. You know the difference between the two. The Beis Yosef is really a preparatory stage for the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is the bottom line, so to speak. You know, after you reduce it to the final halacha, the Beis Yosef is a development in which you gather together all the different sugyas and you show how we should paskin. Anyway, there were three Jews in that generation. One, of course, was Rav Yosef Karo. The other one was Rav Yosef Teitatsk, if I'm reading it. I never heard of him. And then there was Mari Ibn Leib. The Mari Ibn Leib lived in Sfat, and he was one of those who got smicha. You know, there was a period of time during the Beis Yosef's life when there was a chidush ha-smicha. But Heskimu min ha-shamayim she-tinosein das... Kimar and Rav Yosef Kari Chavreyu. This was the final decree up in the heavens. This is again a Kabbal, the Chidah, back to this Zkenim, that Rav Yosef Kari would be chosen amongst the three. And why? You guessed it. Because of his Anova. Hey Yosef, who it's Tayen, Ba'an Bemidas Anova, Anova Yaseir Yosef Me'ashar. In fact, you will read his Sfarim, and you always see that if he quotes another Posek who disagrees with him, he would never use any sort of derogatory innuendo or even a flavor of a derogatory comment. She'ein darko l'saper b'gnus misha posek lo kimoso. In other words, his chasidus, Rav Yosef Karo, expresses itself and comes to the fore in almost every word of his writings. He was such a great honor. Now, if you're familiar with the writings of Rav Yosef Karo, I mean, you can get even a little bit of a glimpse of how great he was in terms of his knowledge. You know, I don't always necessarily understand his logic. I came from a different base medrash than Rav Yosef Karo. But nevertheless, his encyclopedic knowledge is mind-boggling. And even when he says a chiddush, I don't always necessarily agree with it, but I'm always stunned by the brilliance of it. So we don't know about Rav Yosef Karo's inner life, you know, his anova. And here, from the Chidah, in this unbroken tradition back to this Canaan of that generation, we get a little bit of a glimpse of what Rav Yosef Karo was like in terms of his midah of anova. By the way, I'm not going to talk about two other Gedolim who are also published on the page, and they sometimes bickered with each other. One of them actually had sometimes some negative comments about the other one. And they say that person wasn't zoche to reach his potential because he didn't have that midah of hanov. I don't want to mention names here because I don't want to be motzi laz on the gedolim, you know. Now here I want to study something from the Shalah HaKadosh, the Shnei Luchos HaBris. There's a very interesting concept called Chalitzas Na'alayim, that on certain specific occasions we take our shoes off. And we find that Moshe Rabbeinu, in his first encounter with Ribbono Shel'olam, Hashem commands him, Shal Na'alecha Mi'al Raglecha. Now please notice that both the words Na'alecha and Raglecha are in the Lashon Rabbah. It means referring to both leg, both feet and both shoes. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, why do you have to take your shoes off? Ki ha-mokom asher ata omed olav admas kodesh hu. Says the Medrash Rabbah, kol mokom shashchina nigles, wherever you find the Shechina, you have to take off your shoes. We find it by Yoshua that the Shechina came to the Machne Milchama and revealed itself, and Moshe and Yoshua had to take off his shoes. Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, which is where the Shechina is revealed, they had to go barefoot, and perhaps even today, our Kohanim, as a sort of a resemblance, or to remind us of what it was like when the Mikdash stood, they take off their shoes for Birchas Kohen. And I'm wondering, my friends, if possible, this might give us an insight to the fact that on Yom Kippur, we don't wear we don't wear shoes. So let's see if I can succeed in saying so. And then to contrast that with Tisha B'Av, where it's like an entirely different halacha. People think that the prohibition against wearing shoes is identical in both Yom Kippur and in Tisha B'Av, and I think, no, there's a fundamental difference between the two. Now, regarding shoes, does anybody remember, without looking in the next paragraph, I'm just quizzing you, which of the brachas that we recite, bless you in the morning, have to do with shoes? You know, we recite what's called Birchas HaShachar, a whole series of brachas. One of them, Chazal say, is directly connected to wearing shoes. That's called Sha'aso Li Kol Tzarki, which literally translates, you've taken care of all my needs, provided for me. But what does that have to do with the shoes? That's what the Shalom wants to understand. Ma Shaychus Ne'ilas Min Olim Lebracha Zu Sha'aso Li Kol Tzarki. And he quotes his Rebbe, who says that that in order to understand this, we have to look at David HaMelech. David HaMelech declares the greatness of man. V'atchasreu me'at melokim, tamshileu b'mase yodecha, kol shata tachas raglov, tsona v'alofim kulam. And the Rebbe of the Shalom explained that the entire universe and everything within is subdivided into four levels. We all know this, right? So the lowest level is called domem, right? That's carbon. And then we get to tzomeach, which is vegetation. Then we get to a higher level, which are the animal kingdom. And then finally we get to the highest level, that's man, who's the medaber, who's endowed with the power of speech. And what David HaMelech is saying here, when he says, "V'tchasrei mat malakim tamshilehu b'masa yodecha," is that man has the ability to control and dominate over the animal kingdom. Again, if man uses his intelligence properly, and he doesn't put himself into a dangerous situation, he could subdue even the most dangerous of animals. And if so, then Kolshkein, how much more so, does he have dominion over the lower realms of existence, namely Tzomeach and Domem. Everything in the universe is under man's control. In that sense, man, with his sovereignty, which is dominion, he's like God. That's V'tchasrei ma'at melokim. Now, how does this concept of man's superiority over the entire universe, how does it come to an expression? How do we find a symbolic act which demonstrates man, or shall I say, conveys the message of man's control over the universe? So the Shalom says, yes, that's wearing shoes. Why wearing shoes? Why does that demonstrate man's superiority? He says, because shoes are made of leather. Leather is from the hides of animals. He takes the hide of an animal, which again is the highest realm of being until we get to man, who's the medaber, and he kills the animal, takes its hide, and he works the hide until he makes it into a shoe. And he steps on it. So when man steps on a shoe, symbolically, he is indicating his greatness, that he is sort of considering the animal, he's making the animal subservient to him. Does everybody follow that? That's an interesting vision here. I'm not saying this is the only way of learning it, but that's one way of learning. He says, Ne'ilas ha-min olim, therefore wearing shoes, Mora sort of demonstrates, ha-mem shala shala adam, the control of man over the animal kingdom. And therefore, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter wanted to explain that that's the reason why wherever the Shekhinah appears, wherever God presides, we have to take off our shoes. Why? Because the Yerushalmi says about Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen that when he was involved in the process of the Avodah, he had in his hands many different things that he was juggling. He had Shemen B'Yamino. He had Ktores B'Smolo. He had the Minchas HaTovid B'Zro. And he had the Shemen HaMishcha in a certain case that he was holding around his body, Bafudoso. And it's a little bit embarrassing, if you will, almost humiliating, when a person has to carry and juggle so many things at the same time. Why couldn't he use, you know, some friend of his, you know, some other Kohen to help him out? He had to juggle and hold all these things simultaneously. And you might argue that he was a katan. Maybe he wasn't such a Baal Srara. No, what are you talking about? He was the greats, one of the greats of the greats. He's called in the Torah, Nisi Nisiei Alevi Elazar ben Aaron. And yet, he's in a certain embarrassing kind of situation. He's juggling everything together. The answer is, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, Ein Gedula Befaltin Shel Melech. Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen is in the Beis HaMikdash. That is the palace of the king. And you can't prav a godless, you can't say, well, I'm a great Baal Srara in front of the Shekhinah. And the Medrash says, Ra'a Srara Sh'aisa B'yado, he saw that he had a lot of Srara, Elazar, and yet he thought, well, if I'm such an Adam Gadol, why not give to others that they should carry Shi'it Anu Miloshon Mit Ana, you know, that they should help him carry all these different items. No. Hu Atzmo Haya Tohen. Why? Because Ein Gaiva Lifnei Elokim, in the presence of God, in the Heichal, in the Shri Makom HaShem, that's exactly where a person wants to reject Gaiva, and instead he wants to demonstrate Anova, humility. Because he's in close proximity to the divine, omnipotent being. And as we said before, God can't reside in a place of gaiva. So instead of hiring others, you know, or appointing others to help him out, Elazar did the whole thing by himself to demonstrate his anava, ein gaiva lifnei Elokim. And if that be the case, we begin to understand why Moshe Rabbeinu got the command at the snare that he has to take off his min olim, and we'll soon see later why both min olim, because it was a place where the Shekhinah was begilui, was revealed. And that's a place where you're not allowed to wear shoes. Why? Because ein gedula bepaltin shel melech, ein gaiva lifnei hamakom. So we begin to understand that when we make the blessing of Asali Kaltzarki, we're really boasting, in a sense, the greatness of man, that God gave me everything I need, the entire universe presents itself to me, so that I can manipulate, I can take advantage and utilize the universe, I can dominate and control it for my purposes. That's what we thank Hashem for. And that has to do with the shoes, because wearing shoes, more than anything else, indicates that God gave me everything that I need in the universe to utilize, to subjugate, to subdue for my purposes. But we begin to understand that Ein Gedula Befaltin Shel Melech, that Moshe Rabbeinu has to understand that if he's in the place, HaMakom Asher Ta'omed Admas Kodeshu, that's where the Shekhinah is, that's where we have to take off our shoes.
Rabbi.
And I thought maybe Yom Kippur might tie into this kind of thing.
We wear our shoes all the time. So even if we're not in the presence of a Kodesh Baruch, we're wearing our shoes. We're taking into ourselves the notion that we are above the animal.
Superior, correct.
So why, if we're supposed to be a Nevus, that's so humble, why are we constantly, essentially...
Because again, David, to be an Anav doesn't mean to be unaware of our greatness. Okay. Man has to, David HaMelech tells us, V'tchasrei ma'at b'lekim, everything is under our dominion. Man has to realize what potential he has, what greatness he has. The whole universe was given to man. We are the gulat hakoteret of the universe that God created. We're on the highest level on the top of the totem pole. Take advantage of that. Use it. God gave you those gifts. He gave you that dominion, that ability. However, in certain places we need what's called anava yisera. Because as long as you're in a situation, in an ambiance where you're interacting with other human beings, then adarava. Every human being has the right to say, I'm great. You know, I have potential. God gave me tremendous powers and abilities and God invested that in me. But in the presence of God, then there's no room for gaiva. There has to be anofa. Because you can't say in front of God, I am great. You know, God, you gave me divine talents and super abilities. Not in the presence of Hashem. So I suggest, Tzarech Ian, that maybe on Yom Kippur, every one of us is standing in a Mokom HaShoras HaShechinah. And I say this for two reasons. First of all, because it says in the Pasuk, L'tayr eschem, just one second, lifnei Hashem titaru. Describing Yom Kippur, the pasuk says you're standing lifnei Hashem. So again, it's a makom of gilui shechina. Take off your shoes. And secondly, because Chazal tell us that on Yom Kippur we reach a level that's even greater than that of the Malachi Asharis. The Malachi Asharis are always in the presence of God. They never wear shoes. The Brach of Shalsali called Tzarki is not appropriate for a Malach. Today on Yom Kippur we are Malachim, and therefore we declare we're standing with Hashem, and we're even greater than the Malach, because the Malach don't have the challenge of the physical body that we discussed before and having to overcome that. We have to overcome that, and that's what we do on Yom Kippur, that elevates us to the level of Malachim, and therefore we have to take off our shoes. Now if you flip the page to the other side, again we want to look, just one second, okay, that we did already, fine, we did the Chiddah, and now we want to look at Rav Chanoch Tzvi HaKohen Levin. Now back in Poland there was a town that was called Benzin. I don't know if you ever heard of it. Only 30,000 Jews perished there at the time of the Nazis, so why would you have heard of it? You know, what's 30,000? You talk about 6 million, right? Anyway, so he was a Kohen. Obviously, his name was Rav Chanoch Tzvi HaKohen, and he wrote a book on Parsha called Kohen Pe'er. Yechayim Pe'er. And he asks the following question. There's a minog in Chutz Laretz that on Simchas Torah, the Kohanim did not go up to Duchen, even though in Chutz Laretz, even amongst Ashkenazim, on Yom Tovim, on the Regalim, there is Duchenin, there is Nesias Kapayim, but not on Simchas Torah. So some say it's because we're afraid they'll get drunk, there's too much whiskey going around. He doesn't buy into that thesis. He says it has nothing to do with getting drunk or this. The Kohanim are very careful not to drink before they go up to Duchenin. That's why here in Eretz Yisrael we allow Duchenin. But he says the following. What is unique about Simchas HaTorah? We complete the Torah with Vizos HaBrocha Asher Berach Moshe. Moshe is blessing the people. That's what Simchas Torah is about. And what we want to do is we want to analyze the relationship between Moshe and Aaron. Let's just think about it. Sometimes the Torah puts Moshe Rabbeinu's name first and then Aaron. And on one occasion the Torah went ahead and wrote Aaron first and then Moshe. And Chazal say, "Lalamed sheshkulim him." Now, this concept of shkulim him comes to the fore with regard to the Kohanim on Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah is a day which is dedicated to Moshe Rabbeinu. He is the high profile individual. Everything is around Moshe Rabbeinu. We're going to read the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu bestows upon the people of Israel, as the culmination of the 7 days of Pesach and Shmini Atzeres. And therefore he wants to claim that the Kohanim, as the descendants of Aaron, have to play a backseat role over here. They have to be very, very humble. And that's called Moshe Mevatel Aaron HaKohen. There are two brachas. There's one brach that Moshe gives, that's called Vizos HaBracha, and then there's a brach that the Kohen give, Kosev Archas Bnei Yisrael. And in a certain sense, according to the Yechayim Peher, there's a sense of vying for greatness. You know, which bracha is going to be, shall I say, in the limelight? And in this case, because Simchas Torah is the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, Torah's Moshe, therefore the Kohanim take a back seat. And that's the minog that the Kohanim are not Mevarech HaSa'am. Let Moshe Rabbeinu be Mevarech HaSa'am. And I would insist that when the Balkore is reading Vizos HaBracha, he sort of is the, you know, he's the representative of Moshe Rabbeinu to give the Bracha to the people of Israel. And now let's take a look at Parshas Tetzaveh. Now Parshas Tetzaveh is the one Parsha in the Torah after Shmos where Moshe Rabbeinu's name is completely omitted. And who is the center stage of Tetzaveh? It's all about Aaron HaKohen. All the mitzvahs of the Kohen. So he wants to say in this case, Aaron is Mevatel Moshe. V'zeh ha'tam sheb'parshas titzav lo'kosuv shmo shel Moshe Rabbeinu mipnei shehu shehi parshaso shel Aaron HaKohen who uvatel es Moshe Rabbeinu atzmo. V'zehu Moshe v'Aaron hu Aaron u'Moshe. That's why the Torah say it in both directions, sheshkulim heim. Sometimes Aaron and his descendants have to sort of take a back seat to Moshe Rabbeinu, and sometimes Moshe Rabbeinu has to take a back seat to Aaron in Parshas Tetzaveh. It's al pidrush, but you know, shivim panim la Torah. I love to see these chaps, you know, that go below the surface. Now, the Bet Ish Chai, as you know, wrote a tremendous work on Agadita. You know, the Agadita is very hard to understand. And that's called the Ben Yehoyada. And the Gemara Baba Basra analyzes the comparison or compares and contrasts Moshe and Yoshua. And the Gemara says the following. Zkedim Sheba Oso Hador, when that generation analyzed Moshe and Yoshua, Amru, they declared Pnei Moshe Kipnei Yoshua. I'm sorry. Pnei Moshe kipnei Chama, and Pnei Yoshua kipnei Levana. And then it says Oylanu Liyoso Busha, etc. So Rabbosai, this is a very famous Gemara. You're all familiar with it. That Moshe Rabbeinu is compared to the sun, and Yoshua to the moon. Now, obviously, Chazal are trying to convey the message that Moshe is greater than Yoshua. That's the simple pshat. We're going to see a new pshat later on. That's going to come in number six. However, before we see that, the Ben Yehoyada wants to suggest that what this Chazal is really telling us is that we have no clue. We don't even have an iota of an idea of what the greatness of Moshe and Yoshua is all about. You know, we don't even have a glimpse of it. And that's the comparison to the Chama and to the Levana. And he writes the following. If you take a look at the Chama, you know, you could almost draw a picture in which the sun is a small sphere, you know, if you don't make it like a map to scale, you know what I mean? So you look b'yedei ha'adam and something that's absolutely massive, but you only see a small fraction of the sun. The sun is magnified by a million times what you see it, and it's even greater than the entire earth by manyfold. The earth that includes all the yam and all the yabasha. And by comparing Moshe Rabbeinu to the Chama, what Chazal want to convey to us is that when we look at Moshe Rabbeinu, when we see him, and even those who lived in his generation, they assess or evaluate his milos and his chashivus just like we might mistakenly evaluate or devaluate the sun in comparison to what it really is. So B'eni Adam, it looks like Moshe, based on the psukim, is a human being like any other human being, and he speaks like any other human being. What we fail to see is that we're only looking at a small fraction of Moshe Rabbeinu. Echad mi'elef min ha'chashiva shelo ha'amitis. We're only taking getting a little bit of a glimpse of the true greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And why did Chazal emphasize Pnei Moshe? Because the word Pnei, which in plural is Panim, always indicates chashivus, significance. So the chashivus of Moshe, like for example, it says pnei ha'aretz. The pnei are the most significant members of the community, of the people who lived in that area. So pnei Moshe means the chashivus of Moshe. And his chashivus should be compared to that of the sun. That just like in the case of the sun, we only get a small glimpse and a nuance of an idea of what the sun is really like in its greatness. We get Aleph me Alfe Alofim. So too, with regard to the Chashivas of Moshe Rabbeinu, we really only get a small glimpse of the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now we can begin to appreciate why Chazal, in the very same context in the Sugya Bava Basra, want to tell us about the greatness of Yoshua. Again, Yoshua is not as great as the sun, but he's as great as the moon. And when you look out at the moon, you know, you usually see, again, different places and different vantage points, but usually see a moon, and you don't have an idea, a clue of how great the moon is. And therefore, the true, genuine chashivus of Yoshua is much greater than what we read, you know, the impression that we get when we read a superficial reading of the Ksuvim of the Tanakh. And just like when we look at the Levana, in truth, the Levana is thousands of times greater than what seems and appears to the eye of man. So too, when you read the psukim that describe Yoshua's greatness, you only get a small glimpse of what Yoshua is all about. Rabosai, I have to apologize. My watch broke today. What time is it?
8:20.
So we have 10 minutes, and that's more than adequate to finish what I prepared for you tonight. One of the contemporaries that writes on philosophical ideas today is Rav Nosson Gestetner. And he has many different sforim. And he definitely gives us an original insight into Chazal, and especially into the Agadot. And on this Gemara in Baba Basra, he says the following. Take a look at the beginning of the story of creation in Bereishis Perek Aleph. And it says that God created the two luminaries, Hama'oros HaGedolim. And that's a reference to, of course, the sun and the moon. How's the sun described? It's the Ma'ar HaGadol. And that's during the daylight hours, it reigns supreme. How is the moon described? The Ma'ar HaKatan. And he asks the following question. This is the Horos Nosan, Reb Nosson Gestetner. He says, what is it about the Levana, the moon, that it's described as the Mar HaKotam in comparison, in contrast to the sun? Is it just a matter of its size? So he has a very original insight. You know that at a bris, we bestow a blessing on the child, the Rachanimol, and we say, Zeakotan Godol Yir. And some people take it superficially to mean that this child will grow up to be an older person, you know, or so. He says, no, there's a much deeper meaning. The Gemara tells us in Bab Metzia that you can have two minors, children, and one is called a Katan, and the other is called a Godol. Why? He says the following. A katan v'eino samach al shulchan aviv, if a child is financially independent, doesn't matter one iota how old he is, age does not determine, he's called a gadol. And yet, an older person, but he's samach al shulchan aviv, he gets supported by his father, he's called a katan, no matter how old he is. So it's paradoxical. You can have a person who's 18 years old, but he has no source of income. He comes to his father on a weekly basis for his allowance. He may be 18, he may be 28 or 38. He's a cut. That's what Gemara says in Bava Metzia. You can have a child who's 10 years old, but he has a fat bank account. He doesn't have to come on to his father to support himself. And maybe he inherited money through his mother's relatives, his grandparents on his mother's side, and he's called a gadol, even though he's only 10 years old. What's the Vart? What's the Yisod? He says the following. It all depends on independence. Are you independent or are you dependent? He says the name Gadol is not a reflection of a person's age, but rather of a person's independence. If he's an original person, he doesn't have to come on to his father, in other words, for the Parnassa, then he's called a Gadol. I don't care what age he's at. But someone who's somech al shulchan aviv, he depends upon others for his parnasa, he doesn't have anything from himself, it's only what others give him, whether it's his father or somebody else, he's called a cut. And if that be the case, he says, on the top left, we begin to understand why the sun is called the Ma'ar HaGadol, because it's an original source of light. The sun doesn't have to reflect its light from anywhere else, therefore it's Eino somech al shulchan acherim. On the other hand, in contrast, the moon is called the Mara Cotton because it has no original light. All its light is reflected off the sun. And he quotes the Zohar, who says, "The hadlo inar sahara el minahor de shimsha," that the light that comes forward from the sun is only the light that is reflected from the moon. Excuse me, is only the light that's reflected from the sun. Vahavile. Now the moon becomes somech al shulchan acherim de habikatan. The moon is a cut, not because of the size of the moon, but because it's not an original source. So when we say to the child, after his mila zakat and gadol year, what we mean to say is that we bless this child, that he will be an original source of Torah knowledge and so forth. He won't be dependent on others. He'll be so great in Torah that he has his own. He's a fountain. He's a mayan of Torah. And so too, if we compare Yoshua to Moshe Rabbeinu, Yoshua receives the Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu. So anything that Yoshua has is just what bounces off Moshe Rabbeinu. And kol kocho hayomi Moshe Rabbeinu shehetzil olav mihodo, that Moshe Rabbeinu, in a sense, gave from his grandeur, his greatness, over to Yoshua. Yoshua's like the Levana. And that's why the Gemara tells us that Pnei Yoshua kipnei halavana. And I think this reflects very well on what we saw in Reb Chaim Volozhin, that in the case of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's Mesira, in the case of Yoshua, it's Kabbalah. Yoshua doesn't have that greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. He doesn't reach Moshe Rabbeinu's level. He's not Mizachech as Gufo. He doesn't become pure spiritual, such that his body is no longer a barrier. Yoshua doesn't reach the level of Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Grono. Yoshua doesn't have the level of Anova of Moshe Rabbeinu. And in that sense, Yoshua is not an original, but rather a copy. He's a reflection of the greatness of Moshe. But perhaps the most radical approach to this Gemara in Bava Basra that we're studying, I call it a revolution of sorts, and it turns around our whole understanding of what the Gemara means, is in the Bava Rebbe. As you may know, the Bava Rebbe was one of the few great giants of Hasidus that survived the Holocaust. You know, the Nazis had a tremendous desire to kill all greats, and as soon as they discovered that that Jew was a Rebbe or something of that sort, that was horrible. But the Bava Rebbe survived, and he lived to an old age. His name was Halberstam. And he says the following. He doesn't understand why at the end of this statement, comparing the Pnei Moshe to the Pnei Chama, the Pnei Yoshua to the Pnei Levana, the Gemara adds another postscript. And it says, Oila la liosa busha, oila liosa klima. And it sounds like this was part of the original statement. And maybe it's a sort of embarrassing description of Yoshua. As we saw before, Yoshua is only a carbon copy receiving and reflecting Moshe's life. But he wants to say the following. He says that the original statement of this Kanim of Oso Adar terminates with the words, Pnei Yoshua Kepnei Levana. And that was the end of their statement. Has Kanim lo omru ki im tchila saman. Pnei Moshe, Kepnei Chama, Pnei Yoshua Kepnei Levana. In other words, what they were saying is that Yoshua did not reach that level of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara says, commenting on the original statement of the Zekanim, Oila liosa busha, oila liosa chalim. In other words, what the Zekanim were saying and conveying that message that Yoshua is on a lower level, a lower madrega, that's a busha chalim. That's something that's embarrassing. Wow, this is pretty rare. Why? Because the af garmim shachir yishmu mehem v'yuldu lelech bidarchem. The later generation made this comment on the earlier generation that there's a busha chalim over here. And it's going to have a ripple effect. It's going to have a negative impact, repercussions that we don't want. Because what we understand from this is that a person should not accept Yoshua because Ki'ilu Yoshua is second fiddle. He's on a lower level. The Hachna, when we accept the Morus, you know, the authority of someone, it's got to go back to the greatest in that generation. That's Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the Chavah. And the impression is that, you know what? Yoshua, I don't have to be machnia myself to Yoshua. If that be the case, then we're not going to listen carefully and obey the words of Yehoshua v'zetos Godel. Because Moshe Rabbeinu somach es yodov al Yehoshua, Moshe Rabbeinu gave Yehoshua smicha, v'hu, and he, meaning Yehoshua, milas makom rabo, he is the replacement of Moshe. Again, maybe Yehoshua is not on the great level of Moshe Rabbeinu, but mutal aleim lachnia atzmo Yehoshua k'mo bimei Moshe Rabbeinu l'Moshe. In that generation of Moshe Rabbeinu, we're machnia, we subjugate ourselves and accept the modesty, the authority of Moshe, but in the next generation, we must be machnia ourselves to Yehoshua. That's called Yiftach B'dor, Kishmur B'dor, Yiftach B'dor. L'man Yishmu Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. Every community of Israel, in its time, in its generation, has to find its leaders and accept their morus, their authority. And L'zeh, in order to make sure that we got that message, is Tzoekes HaGemara. The Gemara, so to speak, breaks out in a cry, Neged HaZkenim Shebedor, and says, the Zkenim of that door may have given us the wrong impression. Be careful. That's a bush and a halima to think that, oh, you know, Yehoshua is on a lower level and therefore we don't have to concern ourselves. So just to summarize what we learned tonight based on the insights of Reb Chaim Volozhin, who says that Moshe Rabbeinu is that much greater than all the other Nevi'im because he reaches the greatest level of Hanava, and his goof is nothing. We define that Nova. Nova doesn't mean he's not aware, he doesn't recognize his greatness. He certainly does recognize his greatness, but he attributes it all to Hashem. He doesn't feel superior to anyone else. He realizes that he was given that unique ability, that unique challenge, and he has to live up to that challenge. We have to realize that in a place where the Shekhinah is, that's where we have to have a special Nova in the Beis HaKnesses, which is like the Heichal, the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem, the Shekhinah is there. We have to make sure we don't fight and think, oh, I'm greater than him, why did he get this kibud and me not? We spoke about the fact that there were other greats in the generation of Rabbi Yosef Cairo, but Rabbi Yosef Cairo was chosen. And why was he the chosen one? Because of his Anova, of his Shiflus. We spoke about Shal Na'al Chamei Araglecha, that Moshe Rabbeinu has to take off his shoes because the shoe represents the superior nature of man, but Chasrei Mat Velukim, V'tamshilu B'maisi Yodech, and therefore take off the shoes, ain't gaivol if now mokom. And finally, we spoke about the fact that although Moshe Rabbeinu is as great as the Chama, he's the original source of Chachma, and Yehoshua is like the Levon in the sense that the Chachma of Moshe Rabbeinu bounces off Yehoshua, reflected light like the moon, but nevertheless, we have to understand that Yehoshua is great, and perhaps when we look at the moon, we don't appreciate its greatness. When we look at Yehoshua, we don't appreciate his greatness, which is thousands of times beyond what we think. And therefore, we have to accept his authority, and we have to machnia ourselves to him. If we take these messages to heart, then I think Yiras Hashem will be zocheh to ascend higher and higher in the Har Hashem, to get closer to the Shekhinah, to absorb and imitate those greats who were paradigms of Hanova and Shiflus, and that will certainly uplift us, and we should Yiras Hashem be zocheh to that Mida of Hanova, which is perhaps, I think, the most important of all of me, those Ken Yeratzon.
Thank you very much.